What's up, RPLRD? Y'all are hearing that Mike Monday on RPLR Goals. We really appreciate y'all tuning in. It's me and my wonderful co-host, Jonathan. Jonathan, how you doing today? How you doing this week? I know it's been a busy sports week. So what's been going on, brother?
Good. No complaints. Anytime the Bucks get a win on Monday night. And even though, you know, the college football has been crazy, what a weekend it was outside of the Florida teams, you know, the Georgia-Tennessee game.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy. There's a handful more games like that on Saturday. Clemson, Georgia Tech. So it's really hard to be in a bad mood when you get to watch college football / NFL football like 4 out of the 7 days in a week. So, yeah, it's hard to find me in a bad mood nowadays.
No, I feel you, man. I feel you. Right now, it's a heck of a time to be a sports fan for sure. It's been fantastic. You got baseball season going on. You know, it's coming down the stretch. So, obviously, the Rays, unfortunately, not involved. But, you know, the postseason race is heating up. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff. And like you said, a lot of really great college football. And the Bucks winning on Monday. Hey, if y'all are listening, you know, I was on the Buck Show last night. Definitely hit that like and subscribe button. You can find us on any social media platform as well at RBLR Sports. We'd really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Bulls weekend didn't go to plan. You know, they kind of got trounced. They've come crashing back down to earth. It was 49-12. Not a great game, you know, not a great showing. I was hoping for a little bit more competition. You know, a 37 point loss, never a great thing, even against an elite team like Miami. Were there any concerns, Jonathan, that you saw out of this game moving forward for USF, or is it just kind of a wipe your hands like, hey, it's Miami?
Yeah, I think more of the latter, because when you look at it in a sense, it's, you know, this is what's supposed to happen. Like, USF has a really good, you know, first 22 if you count offense, defense, starters.
Right.
But I think in this game you saw, you know, they don't have the depth that Miami has, right? That competitive depth is there. The competitiveness in the starters, right, that you need. But, you know, when you get to teams in these power conferences, like, they're rotating these defense linemen in, like, every third play, keeping them fresh, right? And when USF does that, it's just not the same talent as that first group. But, again, you got to – for me, I look big picture. Like, you're a huge USF fan. If you're saying you go 2-1 during this three-game stretch, like, you're doing backflips. Like, absolutely. Exactly, 100%. But things that are a little bit concerning, only running the ball for 40 yards on 1.5 yards per carry.
Yeah.
Not great. I know it's Miami, and Miami, I think, has a top five defensive line in the country. Like, I get it, but you know, it that's not concerning if you think the ceiling for USF is okay. Maybe winning the American, being the 28th best team in the country, right? If that's your concern, that's, you know, it's not a big deal. But for me, the expectation for USF now should be to make the playoff.
And, right,
you know, if, as long as you don't lose the food, like we always talk about, you should be in a good spot. But USF, as good as Byron Brown is, they're a run first team, and they need to be able to run the ball effectively in order to get to the play action balls for Brown to hit him deep. It helps their tempo a little bit more when you be able to run the ball for those big chunk plays too. So that's the only part I find a little bit concerning. But I also think I told you guys before one of the first podcasts, I'm very high on Miami this year. So
yeah, me too.
I don't think anything else of USF. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, it's definitely kind of a wash your hands type of deal here. Like you said, Miami's got that elite depth of a big time program because they are a big time program. It's really tough to compete with, like you said, they're rotating in and out NFL players across the defensive and offensive line and the secondary, just across the board. It's just NFL caliber talent. And USF, unfortunately, doesn't have that. You know, that's kind of the gap is pretty wide there, which is unfortunate. But then again, you know, we said the same thing about the UF game, so I was expecting a little bit more competition. But to sustain that level of play, like, to just be like white knuckle, like pedal to the metal, that's tough. You know, that's a really hard thing to ask of any team, but in particular an American Conference team like USF. So, yeah, like you said, their goals and aspirations should be a lot bigger than just like competing for the American. You know, like you said, if they're able to take care of business and and win the games that they're supposed to win, I very much think they could be in the playoff conversation, because, you know, those two wins are going to loom large, I think, at the end of the season. Like, beating UF and Boise State, really big deal, or at least it should be, to the playoff selection committee. And if USF can win the American Conference, I think they have just as good a shot as any Power Five or whatever it's called. I always get Power Five and Group of Five.
I guess technically now it's Power Four because rip the Pac-12. But
right, rip the Pac-12, Power Four. They have as good a shot as any of any Group of Five or Group of Six. I don't know, but as good a shot as any non-SEC or Big Ten school to make the playoff.
I agree.
I'm excited to see how USF can progress throughout the season, even regardless of this loss. But since we're speaking about the college football playoffs, the rankings came out this weekend, the AP poll. I know that was a huge controversy last week with a couple of voters just leaving USF off their top 25 entirely, which was very silly. And, you know, just led to a kind of a lot of kind of unnecessary discourse. But this week, I thought USF had even more of a gripe, to be quite honest. They were left off the AP poll entirely, like not even just a few ballots. Like they did not make the top 25. I get it. USF looked pretty rough against Miami. You know, losing by 30 plus points is never going to be a good thing. But I was a bit surprised that USF got knocked out of the top 25 entirely. Were you, Jonathan?
Yeah. I mean, I was very adamant last week that I think the top 25 is a joke, to be completely honest with you. But the people that do it think too much about the preseason expectation for the team. Doesn't matter. Through 3 weeks of the season, who's been the 25 best teams?
Right.
Like, I think Texas, I don't know what Texas is. Texas is like, I think they're still top 10, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. They're number 8. Mm-hmm. Texas has been awful this season. Right. Why are they number 8? Because they have a Manning at quarterback?
Right.
Like, don't get me wrong. Texas talent profile is insane. They're a top 5 roster. We talk about top 10. They're a top 5 roster. Mm-hmm. But through 3 weeks of the season, which is what we should be ranking these teams by, them struggling in against UTEP, like I'm pretty sure that's who they played last week.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do? Right.
Yeah,
I look at some of these teams like Michigan's ranked 21. They're 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Who have they beaten? Like New Mexico State at home. Say what you want about Florida. Florida is going to end up beating teams that, and people are going to be like, oh, wow, like, you know, look at Florida. You know, if it wasn't for 5 interceptions at Death Valley, Florida beats, I want to say probably they beat LSU, and LSU is the number 3 ranked team in the country. So sure. I think that win's going to age very well for USF. And then, you know, obviously for Boise, I think Boise was a little bit overranked as well in the preseason, but still, like, it's still a team that made the playoff last year. But for me, it's like you can pick up a ton of these teams. Like, I know we're going to get into Notre Dame a little bit. I credit teams that go out and play people. So would I rank Notre Dame? No. But am I like incredibly appalled at Notre Dame's ranked? No, because I think you should be rewarded somewhat for playing these teams. But like Michigan should not be ranked ahead of USF. You know, you could argue that based off this season, a handful of these teams are even undefeated should not be ranked ahead in front of USF. Do you know Penn State, the mighty Nittany Lions, who they have played this year? They've played two. I don't even know if they're the FCS teams. They played Villanova in week 3, the powerhouse. Husky. No, I think my bad. I was thinking basketball. Now, Villanova, I didn't even know reinstated their football program.
Right.
They're playing like Delaware in these schools through the first 3 weeks.
And Delaware's a year 1 D1 school.
Exactly. And USF's going and playing teams on the road, going to Florida, going to Miami, hosting Boise. So. Yeah, I think it's a shame that that USF is not in the top 25. It's ridiculous. I don't know if you know Josh Pate. He's one of the biggest college football voices. He has his own show. He ranked USF number 5 because you base it off going into last before the Miami game. What you've seen this season, and it makes sense if we're just based off what we've seen this season.
Right.
USF is, I think, in my opinion, still a top 15 team in the country.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Okay. Cool. I love it. I don't know if I'll go that crazy. I'm definitely top 25 USF. Yes. I'm with you on trying to balance more of, hey, what has a team done this season? Because it is incredibly, like you said, it's really frustrating to watch teams get ranked and go out there and you know, play, like you said, cupcake teams. But with a lot of those teams like Michigan and Penn State and Texas, like they're going to have a schedule that either they're going to put up or shut up type of thing. You know, like by week 8 or 9, they're going to have played some other really good teams and they'll either have won or lost. And so I have a little bit more, I don't want to say understanding, but I'm at least like like at least it won't last, or it will, you know, and they'll deserve it. But with Notre Dame, what's difficult about that one is like you said, they did schedule two really tough teams off the bat. Like I give them full credit for that. But then after those two teams, like the only ranked team that they have moving forward is USC, mm-hmm. and they're barely in the top 25. So I think what frustrates me about that situation is that Notre Dame is going to be ranked, and then they might not lose a game the rest of the season, but they're playing, you know, like USC is their best opponent for the remainder of the season. So you're kind of banking on quality losses, that whole like nauseating phrase. So you're kind of banking on that to rank Notre Dame, and then they'll sneak into the college football playoff, and then they'll get walloped in round one. I know they made the national championship last year. I don't want to poo-poo Notre Dame too much, but it is a bit frustrating. But I definitely feel you on I think Texas is going to get embarrassed in some SEC games. Like I think they're going to face some really tough opponents, and they might lose some tough games because, like, you know, people, like you said, UF is considered maybe like bottom tier SEC team, but like they're still really talented, so they could very well, you know, theoretically, if they played each other, like UF, I don't know if they do, but UF could theoretically beat UT.
They play each other in 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. In 2 weeks. So they could very well go to Tech, or, you know, they could match up and UF could beat them. Like there's a very real possibility that happens. I'm with you. I think Texas definitely kind of playing over their skis in terms of their rankings. So, but luckily, you know, that'll come to fruition, and UT will either prove us wrong or they'll prove us right. So I'm excited because there's just so many great games that are going to be happening over the next over the whole season, really. So it's really exciting. But I know we've mentioned Texas and Penn State. Are there any other teams that you maybe thought were kind of maybe looking to get out of the top 25, or have we kind of mentioned all of them?
I think getting out is fine, but I just want to say real quick, if you were to switch USF and Notre Dame's, like, just their helmet, right? If you put Notre Dame sticker on the USF schedule, Notre Dame is top 10 in the country. You know, like,
yeah,
and I understand his brain recognition, but it shouldn't be. Like, we should be ranking these teams based off what they've done this season. And
100%.
So to your point, I agree with you. And, you know, I picked Texas to win the national championship in the preseason. So imagine, I'm a little flabbergasted by their start. But, you know, just when I look at the rankings, like Vanderbilt, who's number 20, like I would rank them higher. Utah at number 16, like I would rank them higher. But a lot of these AP voters aren't watching Vanderbilt games. Like, I bet you half these people don't even know that Vanderbilt went to Virginia Tech in week two and blew them out right as they played, you know.
They got a guy fired. They came
up, Ranky got fired. And so, you know, it's frustrating because it shouldn't matter with the college football playoff committee, but
It does, right?
Base the rankings off – because the college football playoff committee, we talked about, aren't watching the games too. They're like the AP voters, right? And – you know, I'm not going to act like I'm some expert on Texas Tech who I haven't seen play this year. But guess what? I don't have an AP vote, so it doesn't matter. I can just say that if I did have an AP vote, you would be for sure certain that I'd be watching some film on Texas Tech and their new $80 million roster that they have with other big oil donors and stuff. But I mean, for a team like USF that has to go out and play these schools in order to get noticed, it's frustrating. You know, and all the diehard USF fans should be frustrated that. And even if they went out, they probably still won't be ranked at the end of the day. And, like, I bet you if Florida goes and beats Miami this weekend, Florida is going to be ranked before USF. And that's just the way, unfortunately, that it is. Because if you take that Gator logo and you put it on the USF logo, Florida would be ranked right now. Like, it's unfortunate. You can say that with any team, Notre Dame, Miami, Alabama, Michigan, whatever you want to say. And, like I said, it shouldn't be like that. But it's the world that USF is going to have to live in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm right there with you. And it's tough because, like, in my mind, like, I know you're kind of a Gators fan, so I apologize, but man, I hate UF. Like, I cannot stand UF, but I'm going to be pulling for them because, like, the better that they play, the better that win looks for USF. Like you said. So, I was kind of pulling for UF this past weekend because, like, you know, it was kind of rough to see Lagway throw all those interceptions, but also like, oh, well, I got to give a lot of crap to my Gator friends, but, you know, it was definitely kind of tough, but man, if they would have gone and beaten LSU, oof,
you have plenty of chances for Florida to get a big time win for USF. I mean, they play 100%. The freaking NFC East and during their schedule. So. It's the same for Boise, right? You can say for all these teams now, like Miami going forward, when Miami plays Florida State in the, I think it's the first, I think it's the second week of October or something, first week of October, like if Miami dominates Florida State, that trends for USF better. You know, like if USF goes 11-1 and Florida ends up 8-4 and Miami is 11-1 and Boise ends up going 8-4, right? And then I don't know how the American is going to shake out. Like, I don't know how Charlotte's looking this year, to be completely honest with you. But, you know, it's like I said, Memphis has notoriously been good. Tulane, I know for a fact, is good.
Yeah,
because Tulane's I've seen them play twice. And they probably have a top 10 coach in the country that's somehow still coaching at Tulane.
Yeah.
Scott Strickland, if you're listening, make a call. But if it's, you know, when you look at USF, they don't play Tulane in the regular season, right? So they're going to have to, that could be like a pre-playoff game, right? If they both meet up in the American Conference Championship, which would be cinema to see that, to be completely honest with you. But like for USF, you're kind of rooting for the traditional powers to be good. Like even North Texas looks good so far. You know what I mean? Like people are looking at North Texas as like a sleeper and, you know, USF plays them, USF plays Memphis. But if you're looking at like Charlotte, FAU, UTSA, who I said took Texas to the wire and they did, but you know, you look at some of these, they didn't take Texas and they played Texas A&M. But anyway, Texas played some crappy other school from Texas and
UTEP.
But I said UTEP, not UTSA. You're right. But anyway, what I'm getting to this point in saying that, you know, the American is a little bit up this year if you look at it from years past. So I think that kind of strengthens USF positioning if, you know, they take care of business.
Yeah, I think the American Conference has a very good chance. As long, the tough part is that, you know, these American Conference teams that are pretty good might end up beating up on each other. Yeah, and then the committee looks at that and then they say, oh, well, they lost three or four games this year. How can we let them in the college football playoff? And then the American Conference champion doesn't end up in the college football playoff. That's what I hope doesn't happen. Yeah. But it is a realistic possibility where, like, you know, USF loses to Memphis and, you know, North Texas and then – you know, it's just, it's one of those things where it's tough, but if USF goes undefeated in American Conference play, it's going to be tough to keep them out of the college football playoff. Honestly, kind of regardless of whether they win the conference or not. But then again, like we're saying, it's the brand over, you know, brand over play thing. So, then again, it could very well happen. But shifting our focus a little bit to the rest of the school's athletics, the women's soccer team, they took down Grambling 6-0. They've been cooking lately. I think that's their third straight win. So that's some really exciting stuff. Just to shout out the women's soccer team. They've been doing really, really well. For shifting our focus back to the football team after that little side quest, they're playing South Carolina State this weekend. They have sort of the FCS, I don't want to call them a cupcake team. I always feel bad calling the D2 cupcakes team because, like, you know,
they're USF's paying them to come, you know, like, you know, so if you're getting paid to play, then I think it's okay to call them a cupcake.
Right. You know, that's a fair point.
I think Florida played USF to play, so I don't know when you get to that.
Right.
Anyway, I think it's fair to call it a cupcake.
That's fair. Yeah. So it's their cupcake opponent. You know, if you play college football, the video game, it's the FCS Southeast. Although these aren't the last year was the Pandas. I don't remember what FCS Southeast.
I think one's like the Sharks or something.
That's it. The Sharks. Yeah. Because the FCS East team is the Judicials.
Oh yeah.
Know that. Yeah. Because they run the option. So I always play them because then you can just anyways, we're getting into college football video game talk. But South Carolina State, a lesser opponent for sure. So what can USF do to sort of build upon this successful start? Because after this opponent, then they have a bye week and then they start conference play. Then they play Charlotte at home and then they get into it. So what do you look for teams when they play these types of games? Like UF played Long Beach State in, I think, week one. How do you, you know, what do you think this team should do in terms of building upon their successful start?
First, I want to say having a game in September in the state of Florida at noon should be a war crime. Like, I feel like every game should be a night game, especially if you play kind of teams like this. Like a noon game at Ray J on Saturday is going to be brutal.
Yeah.
But and hopefully it's overcast or something to get you guys out of it. But I look to see domination on the line of scrimmage. You heard me say over the course of these 3-4 weeks, you know, line of scrimmage, line of scrimmage, line of scrimmage. Because I think the line of scrimmage play is so important going forward. And USF has not only competed, they've been very good at the line of scrimmage against these bigger name teams. Mm-hmm. I hope to continue to see that. Like I said, they ran for like 1.4 yards per carry against Miami. You know, can we up that? Can we get 6 yards a carry against you know, South Carolina State? You know, that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for Byron Brown to not have to play in the second half, to be completely honest with you. Not have to play in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He's been getting pounded by these – these teams, you know, get him off his feet, get some other starters off your feet, their feet, you know. Whether it's Shuler or Harris on the defense, who's been fantastic this season. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for USF not to have a letdown, not to have this be like 14-3 at halftime, you know, right, that kind of thing. Yeah. For them to be in control, do their job, and then, you know, get some of the guys that don't normally play in there during the fourth quarter and be healthy going to the bye week, and then get ready to start American play. Because I'm pretty sure they start American play. I just had their schedule pulled up a minute ago. They start American play against Charlotte. We've talked about Charlotte a lot. So
yeah, the 49ers, yeah.
So, you know, you get a bye and then Charlotte, and then you play at North Texas, which is one of your two biggest games of the year. So dominant the line of scrimmage. Don't be up 7-3 at halftime or something like that, 14-8 or some funky score. Like, go take care of business, and then, you know, get healthy for some of the bigger games that are coming down the chute.
Yeah, absolutely. Because knock on every freaking wood surface you can. Unlike the Bucks, they've actually been pretty healthy. The Bucks have been brutal. To come out 2-1 out of this stretch and to also have all of your players be healthy is miraculous. Like, I don't think, like, obviously 3-0 would have been perfect, but I really don't think you could have pictured a better start for USF, frankly, to set themselves up. And like you said, going into this game, as long as they can get some guys some rest, then they can really kind of ride this momentum into conference play. Because, you know, the first 3 weeks you're getting up because you're playing the big time games, the big time teams, but conference play, you know, that's equally big time, because these are the games that matter. Like, if they would have gone 0-3, they still could have gone undefeated in conference play and won the American, and nobody would have been disappointed at all. But at this point now, it's like, okay, now y'all gotta win this conference, because otherwise it's kind of a letdown, especially considering this start. But I wanted to talk about maybe some backups that we're hopefully gonna see play a lot. We'll start at the quarterback position. Gaston Moore, transfer from Tennessee. He came in at the very last, well, I don't want to say the very last, but pretty much the last minute, right before the season, after Bryce Archie got drafted by the Cincinnati Reds. So he's going to play baseball. Good for Bryce. Bryce was the starter for most of the year last year, but now the new backup is Gaston Moore. So I'd assume that that's sort of the guy that they put in, although we could very well see, Marcellus Tate. He's another kind of, I think he's a sophomore. I don't know if he was redshirted last year or not, but you could see him. He's sort of a pro style quarterback. But Gaston Moore, I'd imagine they want to get him some playing time, because he came out in the Miami game towards the end when things were out of hand. He's very familiar with Alex Golish's offense. So I'd assume that he's the guy that's next up. Are there any other backups that you're looking at to sort of make some noise maybe in the second half?
Yeah, you know, Rodney Hill was the guy that, two-way guy. And it's weird when people first coming in, and Hill's a freshman, but in the terms of the transfer portal, like Gaston, who you talk about, played, he's like a six-year senior something crazy. You know what I mean? Like, he was the backup to – he's a fifth-year senior. He's a backup to Nico last year at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Nico, who – Emile Ava, who is terrible. But kidding. But, and the fact that you have to go out and get someone that you trust to be your backup because of the way that Byron Brown plays, right?
Yes.
So I think you're right. The fact that you can get him reps in a game situation in this offense, yes, he's familiar with Golish's offense. Golish was the offense coordinator at Tennessee while he was there for a time. They crossed paths, but still, like, Golish doesn't have the exact same plays verbatim, same exact playbook, all 100 whatever plays that he did when Gaston Moore was a freshman at Tennessee. You know what I mean? And you can rep it all the time in practice, but there's nothing that beats real game reps. So, those are the two names that I'm kind of looking for. You know, anytime you see kind of two-way player, since the whole Travis Hunter explosion, you get a little bit excited, but obviously, we don't have a Travis Hunter at USF, but in a game that's going to be like this, those are some of the names that I'm looking at.
Yeah, and I love the Rodney Hill shout out, because he is probably one of the most like athletic linebackers USF has in terms of like speed and stuff like that. And like you said, the two-way status out of high school. I think he played running back in high school, but he played quite a bit last season. He appeared in, I think, 13 games, and he played in a lot against Southern Miss and Bethune-Cookman, sort of the two blowout games, if you will, from last year. So he's probably the next man up once Mac Harris and Shuler head out, which I believe it's both of their last seasons. So Rodney Hill, getting him some playing time is going to be huge, especially for his development, because, you know, theoretically, fingers crossed, hopefully he won't have to play very much for the rest of the year because Shuler and Harris have those two linebacker spots locked down. But some other names I wanted to shout out, Jonathan Echols, sophomore tight end. Haven't seen a lot of him, honestly. It's been kind of a bit of a letdown because he was a four-star. Like, he was sort of their big get in last year's, or the year before last year's recruiting class, Alex Golish's first. And he only played two games last year, which is fine. You know, it's his freshman season. But he hasn't gotten a lot of action so far this year. I was kind of expecting him to maybe back up Wyatt Sullivan, the transfer that's starting at tight end right now. But it's sort of been Sullivan and Weston Wolf mostly. And so, you know, I'm hoping that Jonathan Echols can get a little bit more playing time this weekend because, man, he's super athletic, super talented. He was an edge rusher at the IMG Academy right down the road. So the hope is that, you know, once Sullivan and Wolf, you know, leave, then Echols is sort of the next man up, sort of like Rodney Hill. And then Nakai Davenport, he's a running back, redshirt freshman, three-star recruit out of high school. So not nearly as highly touted as Echols, but he's been playing a good bit more than Echols. He's gotten some touches the first few weeks. And, you know, the running back position, they love to shift guys in and out. That's the, you know, that's the goalish offense. They're pedal to the metal, so they have to get fresh guys in there kind of every drive. And obviously, Cartavius Norton and Alvin Isaac have been the two sort of lead backs so far to start the season. But you want to get them rest, want to get them off their feet, not taking those hits. So Davenport is probably going to be the guy that gets a lot of carries in that second half, assuming things go to plan, of course. But yeah, just wanted to shout out some backups because I know USF, they got Byron Brown, they got Mac Harris, Shuler, and Singleton, the star wide receiver, and Nimrod. Like, they've got a lot of really great players, but they've also got some fun backups, even if they're not Miami or UF future NFL players. They're still, you know, they're D1 athletes. Like, they're very impressive in their own right. Now I wanted to shift the topic to a little bit of a kind of a downer, if you will. Alex Golish obviously has had an immensely successful start to his time at USF as a head coach. I know going 7-6 for two straight seasons doesn't sound great, but compared to where USF was before he got there, it's such a massive 180 type of flip around. And now they've got these two wins against two top 25 teams. So a lot of people are talking about, oh, Alex Golish, he's jumping ship. Like, he's going to get hired by a bigger program, which very well may be. But how likely do you find it that Alex Golish actually does jump ship, assuming that USF continues this momentum and has another really solid season? What are your thoughts on it?
I think it has to be the right job for him. I think he's in the position where he can pick his kind of spot. Like, if Virginia Tech comes calling, I don't think he's going to Virginia Tech, for example, not to pile on, or like UCLA even. Actually, UCLA is a little bit different. They have a lot of resources there. But with a new stadium coming, with a buy-in to USF football, I think that it's going to have to take him like a Florida job, or if the season goes down the drain at Auburn, right? If they end up, you know, Hugh Freeze kind of the hot seat, that kind of job, in order to kind of pry him away from USF, because when you're talking G5, some G5 jobs are better than Power 4 jobs, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's really going to take the right job, and it might not be this year, it might be next year, but, you know, I don't think 10 years from now, Alex Wilson is going to be here, you know, for example. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But
yeah, it's real.
I think so. The Tulane's coach, he had the opportunity to leave this past year, but he didn't. You know, he was similar into Alex Golish, where he had the opportunity to kind of pick where he wants to go, and none of the jobs last year interest him. And this time around, I'm sure there's going to be one that does it at a SEC type school, and he's going to go. So I think Alex Golish might take that similar path. It might be different if USF makes the playoffs. A team might, you know, fire a coach to bring him in, for example. But yeah, like, I don't think he's going to be at USF long term. But I don't think he's going to go be the head coach at, like, no offense to Missouri, but like Missouri, for example. Like, it's gonna I think it's going to be a high profile kind of job for him.
Yeah, and I certainly hope so. Because I mean, we saw it with Willie Taggart, where he kind of jumped ship for Oregon and then jumped ship there to FSU, and it's kind of like, you know, he clearly wanted the FSU job, but he probably left USF a year too early. I think it would have been beneficial for him to stick around and kind of finish out that career at USF and then go to FSU maybe, but who knows, he might've been screwed there anyways. But yeah, it was definitely kind of tough to see that happen. So I'd hate for that to happen with Alex Golish too. And like you said, it's definitely one of those things where he's going to have sort of his pick, especially, like you said, if things continue to go well. Yeah, and I was surprised the Tulane coach didn't leave because, you know, they had Hughes and Mensah who left. You know, Mensah went to Duke, who they beat this past weekend, and Hughes went to Oregon, sort of their two superstar caliber players. So I was a bit surprised, and maybe hopefully Golish kind of takes that same kind of route, because I know he's an Ohio State guy, I believe. I think that's his – that's his alumni. So maybe, you know, maybe his long-term goal is to wait for Ryan Day to retire.
That'll be a while.
Yeah, exactly. That will definitely be a while. So I don't know. Maybe that's kind of a pipe dream, but you never know. So yeah, I'm definitely with you. I do think that Golish seems to have a good head on his shoulders, and he does outwardly seem committed to USF. Obviously, every coach is going to be that way, but it is exciting, especially because USF could be moving to a bigger conference. You know, they could be pulling the UCF route. And, you know, we've seen UCF bring back Scott Frost from the, you know, he went to Nebraska, things didn't pan out, he came back. So yeah, it's definitely a possibility that maybe they move on to a bigger conference and Alex Golish doesn't feel the need to jump ship unless it's a big time school, like you said. So, you know, hopefully that's going to be what ends up happening, but we'll see. So we're nearing the end of our episode, but before we go, I did want to get a prediction from you. I know it's kind of a weird, it's an FCS school, so it's probably going to be a weird score, but, still wanted to get a prediction from you. How much do you think hopefully USF wins by?
Yeah, I get something in the realm like 42-3. I think they'll take care of business 42-3. If this USF team is what I think they are now, if they're a little bit different, it could be 31-17. You know what I mean? So, right. I'm banking that they are the team that I think they are, that we've seen through 3 weeks. And, you know, they're going to look at the Miami game and say, oh, wow. And crazy to say how much, what was the final score, like 48-12 or whatever. As much as it's crazy to say, 49-12. But as much as it's crazy to say that that game was closer than 49-12, there was like that huge rain delay. And USF was competitive in that game for a long time. So I do think that they're going to come through, take care of business, and win by at least 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, I hope so, because I'll be at the game, and man, it'll be kind of a dark cloud if USF doesn't just go out and take care of business. They have played Bethune-Cookman, I think, 2 straight years now to start the Alex Golish era, and they've done that. You know, they haven't played with their food, so to speak. Last year, the whole story was like, oh, well, who's going to come in after Byram? Like, who's going to? And it was just Bryce Archie. It was fine. But so I'll be curious to see those storylines play out, because, you know, Golish can be kind of he can be kind of weird with that kind of thing. We saw it a lot with the Byron Brown injury last year. He kind of hid that a lot. But regardless, it should be a fun game. I'm going to go. I think USF wins. I think they win 45-13. I don't know. It's so hard to predict these scores with the FCS teams, because in college football in general, but especially when they're playing D2 or D3 schools. But I think they take care of business. It should be a fun second half to watch some guys that we don't normally get to see, sort of almost a spring training vibe, if you will, like getting to see a lot of backups maybe. So that's the hope. And if that happens, then cool. That'll be great. And if not, we'll have something to talk about next week, because we will be back next week regardless. Really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Thank you to my co-host, Jonathan, for making my job incredibly easy. We'll be back next week, so definitely stay tuned. Hit that like and subscribe button if you like what you heard. We'll see you next week. And as always, go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.